Now, Ryan Ellis. For his career, he is 7 of 28 in the shootout. Breaks in, slows down, he scores! That'll keep it going. Now, Rocco Grimaldi. 0 of 1 in his Predators career. Brings the puck in through the left circle with pace. He scores! Rocco Grimaldi backhands it in. And the Predators take the shootout 3-2 and win the game 4-3.
I thought it was obviously a gutsy effort all the way through. The first period was really good. Second period was not so good. But then in the third, we kind of bounced back again. And obviously they played well also, but find a way to win.
It's a big 2 points for us. I liked our start today, getting a 2-0 lead. We knew they were going to be coming, but I guess we weren't ready for it. And they took it to us for quite a bit of the second period there and got a lead, but just with a great hand-eye goal at the end of the second to get us tied going to the third, and then we went from there.
It was a big weekend for the Nashville Predators. 3 out of 4 points. And here we are. They're firmly in the playoff discussion again. Welcome into Morning Drive on a beautiful Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode. Sexy Rexy, how you doing?
What's up?
How's your weekend?
It was good. It was a good weekend. And, Preds got 3. I think you said they needed to get 4,
they
right?
They did.
So are you done? Are they done?
No, they're not done. They're not done.
Man, but they are flirting with done every night, aren't they?
It was a very interesting weekend because there were times in both games where you thought, oh my goodness, yeah, this is what we've been waiting to see. And there were also times in both games, and we'll get into this a little bit in the next segment, where you're like, this is awful. Like, what is going on out here? And that's kind of summed up their season so far, which has been very up and down, as we all know. And I thought it was interesting, especially on Saturday night against Columbus. You're on the second half of a back-to-back. You start off the game so well. You're up 2-0. And let's be honest here. You watch that Columbus team, and it was the Walking Dead.
Right, like,
they were
like, done.
They were the Cleveland Monsters, the AHL affiliate of Columbus. I mean, it was I kind of felt bad for them. I was watching Columbus play that game, and I was, you know, they'd have the puck, and they'd be coming up ice. I'm like, okay, who is that? I look down at the sheet, like, well, never heard of him. Okay, he passed it. Who is that? Never heard of him either. Okay, cool. But to their credit, they were able to fight and keep up with the Predators in that game. Obviously, an 8-round shootout, which about the 5th round of the shootout is like, I don't know if this thing's ever going to end. This thing is going to go forever. And the Predators ultimately were able to get it done. But 3 out of 4 points on a weekend, you'll take that every time. I did say that they needed to have 4. I stand by that. They should not have lost that game on Friday night against the Chicago Blackhawks, especially given how fantastic Pekka was Friday night. You got to find a way to start scoring goals. And I tweeted this out Friday night.
Yeah, scoring a 5-on-3, man.
Like, you got to score on a 5-on-3, and you need your big players, like your big guns, to score. Like, we've talked about the process of it, and we've talked about, maybe getting better results out of John Hines and him trying different things. At some point, it just comes down to, dude, when you get a chance, score. Like, you've got to just bear down and score. And I understand that they put Forsberg and Johansson and Arvidsson back together Friday night, and they had some good looks. They played well. Score. Like, at some point, it's all about whether or not you could finish, and they did not do that. And then I thought it was really interesting that the next day against Columbus, Ryan Johansson's on a line with Colin Blackwell and Austin Watson. I think that was kind of a message of where John Hines thinks his star players, and particularly that star player, is at right now.
I mean, there are messages going left and right on this team right now. Talk about line changes. It's a new level of line changes. It's Hines changes. I mean, it's every night. You just don't know. You like that?
That was good.
T-shirt.
I hope you use that.
That's pretty good. Hashtag it. And not only that, what? So power play time for Johansson, Arvidsson, and Duchesne. And I'm going with a Vingan tweet here. I think 11 seconds between the three, and it was just Duchesne for 11 seconds. So, messages being sent. And, again, I mean, Hines kind of downplays that when he talks about it. Sort of like, well, trying to help them, you know, trying to find the right combinations. But, I mean, obviously, that's like one of those things it's not long-term sustainable. I mean, that's one of those things, like, if you did that over a long haul, then that's coach and GM not agreeing on something because, you know, these guys are making a ton of money to produce.
Yep.
But he's trying to shake it up here. And, of course, Johansson did score 30 seconds into a shift on that new line.
He did.
But overall, again, it's just a broken record. Those guys have got to do more.
You look at the standings after the weekend. Preds are still 2 points out of a playoff spot. They have 68 points. Arizona and Calgary both with 70. Preds have games in hand on both of those teams, especially Arizona. They got 4 games in hand on Arizona. And, Joe, the day that we've been talking about for 3 weeks, it's finally here. It's the NHL trade deadline day. It's going to be interesting because, and we'll get into a lot of this coming up at 6:30, but there's not a ton of moves left out there, at least moves that come top of mind.
Right. Maybe there'll be a shocker.
Yeah, maybe there's a shocker, and usually that happens once or twice at the trading deadline every year. There are moves that are made that maybe you don't expect. But right now, you look at it around the league, a lot of the moves that we've thought would be made, especially with defensemen, have already been made. I mean, Mike Green just got traded last night from Detroit to Edmonton. Brendan Dillon, as we know, has already been traded to Mello. Like, there have been a lot of moves that have been made already. Ilya Kovalchuk got traded from Montreal yesterday to Washington to go play with his buddy Alex Ovechkin. So a lot of the work at the trade deadline that's typically saved for the day of, I think, has already been done. So it's going to be interesting today to see what happens around the league and what the Predators do to react to that, because we said, you know, all you got to do right now is put yourself in a position to be there and to be talked about in the playoffs. They're 2 points out. I mean, they're right there in the thick of all this.
Yeah, and what, is it 4 games in hand with Arizona
still? 4 games in hand with Arizona.
It's 2 points, 4 games in hand. So, yeah, I mean, I kind of think that they're going to do nothing today. If I was forced to pick or forced to bet, it would be that the Preds roster will look exactly the same tomorrow as it does right now.
And there was a trade over the weekend.
There was. That's true. They did make a move.
Oh, yes, they did. Mika Salamaki traded from the Nashville Predators organization to Toronto in exchange for Ben Harper, who is a bigger defenseman. You look at his numbers, and it's not good. But, I mean, I don't know what you expect to get in a trade for Mika Salamaki. No disrespect to him, but he's been in the AHL the entire year.
Well, and, you know, at least this means that we can stop hearing Adam Vingan underappreciate Mika Salamaki. I, for one... And I know he was a Laviolette. Like, he was the opposite.
Laviolette loved him.
Loved him. He was like the opposite of Kyle Turris for Laviolette. Like, yes. He would put Salamaki in the lineup and be like, what are you doing?
He's the anti-Kyle Turris.
Yeah. But honestly, I thought in the playoffs, on that fourth line, I never saw him make a critical mistake. I saw him hitting people, flying around. He could skate well. You know, he couldn't, you know, he had no offensive skill.
Right.
But I thought he was a reliable, handy player, and Adam Vingan did not think a lot of Mika Salamaki. I don't think I'm revealing a big secret.
It's really
here.
Disrespectful.
Yeah, come on, Vingan. So good luck to Salamaki. I actually forgot about him, but I thought he
Speaking
did his job well. Yeah, I know. But I thought he did his job well when he was up here.
I agree. And Joe, I think back to this weekend for the second consecutive game. Pecorine was fantastic. He was awesome on Friday night against Chicago, particularly in the first like 10 minutes of the game. Chicago, I think they had a power play opportunity. Patrick Kane had like 17 shots on goal in the first 10 minutes. Like it was unbelievable. And Pekka made save after save on Friday night to really keep that team in the game. And to be honest with you, I mean, there was a barrage there towards the end of the game in regulation where the Blackhawks probably could have and should have won that game in regulation, and Pekka saved the day and got them to overtime to get a point there, gave up the goal on a breakaway to DeBrincat in overtime, which is going to happen if you give up enough breakaway opportunities. But yeah. Got to be very, very encouraging for this Predators team that he's had back-to-back starts where he's looked lights out good.
Yeah, no doubt. It's too bad that, you know, he didn't get 2 points because he deserved it for sure. That there was the one save in particular late in regulation where he's just, you know, it's like it was one of those, how the heck could you possibly get a piece of that puck? But, yeah, 2 straight for him now. And it's also good that Saros, and by the way, there's 2 Saroses. Paul McCann says Saros. I just noticed that. I noticed that Saturday. So Paul McCann
and
Pete Weber are saying Saros and the rest of the world saying Saros.
Maybe we're wrong.
I think we might be the ones that are wrong. But anyway, Saros. I think it's good that he responded to with a good – because, again, like if he has a bad outing Saturday after in tandem with Peck, I mean, we're never too far from this being a thing. We're never far from it. So then today we're probably like, well, maybe a switch, man. You know, I mean, it's – I think the way it is right now, remember that Pekka Rinne has done this in this role, and I don't think you can just overlook that. And, you know, I think there is a little bit less pressure on him. So maybe keep it the same. If they're both playing well, keep it how it is and go with that.
I think so. And, you know, Saturday night was interesting because I agree with you. I think Saros did play well, Saros, whatever, on Saturday night. Now you've got me doing it.
I mean, we got to figure this out.
We do. But it was interesting because, like I said before, you watch that Columbus team, and no disrespect to those guys. They're trying really hard, and there's a lot of effort out there, and that's great. But that was basically an AHL team out there. I mean, you still have Foligno and Zach Werenski and John Tortorella as the coach, so you know they're going to play hard. But just talent-wise, they should not have been in that game with the Predators. And through the end of the first period, they were not. Preds totally dominated the first period. It could have been 3 or 4 to nothing after the first and ended up being 2 to nothing. But then in the second, Columbus crawls all the way back, and it's 3-2. And I was sitting here just looking around like, oh, my God.
Yeah,
if they lose to this team, like you get 1 out of 4 points on the weekend against the Blackhawks, who had lost 7 out of 8 heading into that game, and then the Columbus Blue Jackets, who had lost 7 straight heading into that game and didn't have – I mean, they were losing guys left. I think they had 10 guys in their lineup on Saturday night who had fewer than 100 games of NHL experience. I mean, that's crazy. You never see that around the league anymore. So to the Predators' credit, they did a nice job of, even when they got down in that game, they immediately responded.
That Colton Sisson goal was gigantic.
Because you thought, I mean, all the momentum was against them, and you thought to yourself, oh my goodness, you go in third period down 3-2 to this team.
And the more and more it's like that, then you're pressing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he must have played a little baseball because that was a nice.
That was a heck of a goal.
Yeah.
When we come back, it was a weekend, I think, that really summed up the Pred season so far, and I want to get into what I mean by that next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. They don't ask you how this time of year, Joe Rexrode. They just ask you how many. And the for the Predators this weekend was 3 out of 4 points, which I think, just from a pace standpoint, you'll probably take for the rest of this year. You get 3 out of every 4 points for the rest of this season, you're going to make the playoffs. You're going to be in good shape at that point.
Yeah, and some would say, yeah, but you got to get 4 against those teams. Well, look, if there's a consistent thing with this Nashville team, it's that they're probably more likely to get, you know, 4 points in a back-to-back against 2 really good teams.
Yeah, against the Lightning and the Blues.
Right. So, you know, 3 out of 4 is fine, and there was some good hockey in there.
Sure.
And then there was some head-scratching hockey in there, which is kind of what we've seen all year.
This weekend, to me, really summed up, I think, what the entire season has been like for the Predators. And what I mean by that is this. They got 3 out of 4 points, like we talked about. I think it just as easily could have been 4 out of 4 points this weekend. And I think it also just as easily could have been 0 out of 4 points this weekend. They absolutely could have lost that Chicago game in regulation. And that second period against Columbus was awful. And they absolutely could have lost that game in regulation. And to me, the margin for error for this Predators team and just the difference, it's just not, it's, I mean, it's minute in terms of what you look at for this team right now. Like, they are just such a head-scratching team. And I think that's what makes today so difficult for David Poile, because you're just like, I mean, you're right there. At this point, I think, you know, being a seller is probably out of the question, at least a significant seller, just because you're right there in terms of a playoff spot. You can't just abandon that. And I've had a lot of fans like reach out and be like, you know, they can still sell. Like, if you think you can't make a deep run, you can still sell at this point. But the problem with that is it's the NHL.
Yep. Exactly.
And you can make the playoffs, and all of a sudden you get hot or your goalie gets hot, and you turn around a month and a half later, and you're staring down the barrel of the Stanley Cup final.
I don't care.
It's crazy.
I don't care what anybody says right now. Nobody in this town was sitting there in 2017 and say, this team's going to the Cup final.
Yep.
It was just like, gosh, can they get in the playoffs? And they were battling all the way. And then in the last 10 days or so, they'd kind of gotten enough cushion. They still ended up with the 8. They could have had the 7 that year, but the difference is just that at that point, it's still a growing young team with a lot of guys who hadn't signed long-term deals, and just making the playoffs is cool. That's good, right? It would have been, I think at that point, it would have been the third year in a row.
Yep.
But it wasn't, it's just now, of course, you look at it in terms of what kind of run could they make, because they've made a deep run, but it is, the bottom line is, can you get in? Because if you do get in, there are other teams right now that are in the same position, and they are obviously gearing up and they're doing all they can. If you get in, it's going to mean that you've played some pretty good hockey. I don't care what. I mean, you're not going to fake your way in. You're not going to smoke and mirrors your way in. So if you do get in, already inherent in that is you've done something that says maybe you could do something in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, versus, you know, if you had a big cushion and you just totally bombed late and then you're the 8 seed limping in, maybe, okay, you don't feel good about that. But at least this team's in a position where, like, it has to figure some things out to get there. So if you do, you got a chance.
And if you get in at this point, like, here we are at the trade deadline, they're 2 points out of a playoff spot. If you get in at this point, that means your goaltending down the stretch is going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
And we all know the most important part of your team to have rolling heading into the playoffs is your goaltending. I mean, that's got to be a factor if you're going to make a deep run and win a Stanley Cup. Now, do you need your top players to produce, especially come playoff time? Yes, because if you don't, you're not going anywhere. And the good news on that front, I thought Forsberg was really good on Saturday night. You know, I thought he played really well, got 2 assists on the night, played on a line with Colton Sissons and Victor Arvidsson. But he looked to me like the Philip Forsberg that's in control, that's making plays. Even when he's not getting scoring chances, he's having a pretty intense and deep impact on the game. And to me, Saturday night, he looked like that. And that's got to continue as they move forward here.
I agree. I think Forsberg, and I think, honestly, I don't even think that was necessarily just out of the blue this week. I think Forsberg's been there. We've talked about this. I mean, he's not bearing the puck, right? You know? But I think he's looked more like himself. I think he's the least of the concerns of the four. And Arvidsson is, like block shot Arvidsson had late in that game, you know. I mean, he blocked it with his ankle.
Yeah.
You know, look, Arvidsson is going to give everything he has. It's just a matter of physically, does he have it? What, you know, is he banged up? The two guys that I think need to be shaken up or need to give more and definitely can give more are Duchesne and Johansson. And, of course, Johansson is the constant there when we talk about this. I think he's the top of the list still.
Yeah, and Johansson scored a goal 33 seconds into the game on Saturday night. And after the game, he caught up with our good friend from Darren Donican Chase, Chase McCabe. Here's what Ryan Johansson had to say after the game Saturday night.
Ryan, 2 valuable points for you guys tonight, and it's a tough-fought game. You guys come out swinging, take an early 2-0 lead, but they were able to battle back in the second. What was it that kept you guys in it?
Yeah, juice was great the whole night. Back-to-back, you know, we made some mistakes throughout the game, but for the most part, we dug in, found a way to get things done, and big 2 points for our group, obviously.
I mean, I know you would want to keep that going with 2-0, go with 3-0 or whatever, but to be in the type of situations that you've been in lately, to be able to battle back, that has to feel good and has to help this team learn.
Yeah, no, great response by the group. Them coming back, getting the lead, tying it up, and finding a way to get it done in a shootout, so good character win and definitely something to build off.
It's been several years for you since you've been here, but do you still have a little something extra when you play those guys?
Yeah, it's always nice beating your ex-team, and so it feels good for sure.
That was Ryan Johansson after the game on Saturday, and look, I didn't think that line that he was on with Blackwell and Watson were awesome on Saturday night by any stretch of the imagination, but it was nice to see Johansson come out with the first shift of the game, played with some energy. And the most important part to me is where he scored that goal, which was right in front of the net, which we've talked about, Joe. He's got so much size to him. He's so hard to move out of the areas, out of the hard areas, out of the areas around the net. And when you go to the front of the net like that, if you're Ryan Johansson, I mean, you're going to score a lot of goals the exact same way that he was able to score it on Saturday night. It was, to me, the way he scored that goal is the mindset I think he's got to adopt more often as they move down the stretch here.
Agree. And you saw his reaction, too.
Yeah. I mean, he's fired up.
Yeah. And that's a guy who, you know, he understands. He understands we're all talking about him, and he understands that he can produce a lot more than he's produced. So, you know, with all these guys, it's you know, I don't think anyone is intentionally, not even intentionally, but like slacking off. It's just finding your game and figuring out where you should be and what you should be focusing on. And that's one thing that I think we've always thought with Johansson is the more you're there and the more you're looking to score, you know, he's always going to be a playmaker.
Yep.
But that was good to see. So can you sustain any of that? That's the question moving forward.
And with him, like, the aggressiveness to me is the key part of his game. And a lot of people equate aggressiveness to just shooting the puck all the time. I don't really mean that. I mean, like, when you've got your head down, you're looking to make plays, driving towards the net. And look, like you said, Joe, I mean, he's always going to be a guy that passes first. There's nothing wrong with that. You kind of want that at times at your top centerman. I mean, Crosby, for as gifted as he is as a goal scorer, he looks to pass first. Right. He just does. And you need that from your centerman. But I think more often this year than not, Johansson has not had that aggressiveness that he's shown in the past. And the more you can start to see that down the stretch, that's going to help his team. And I think that's what John Hines is trying to get out of him. Like, he's trying to get him, you know, you're a big guy. Move your feet. Go to the net. Do that every single game. And I think that's the message that John Hines has been trying to send to Ryan Johansson of, you know, we see it. We all see the talent. We all see how good you are when you're playing at your top level. You got to get towards that top level more often than you have this year. And that's going to be the challenge for him heading down the stretch here.
Yeah, I mean, you can go in there and create for others too. Just go in there.
Pretty simple. Exactly right. When we come back, today is finally the day. It's trade deadline day in the NHL. What are some moves that have already been made out there that have impacted the Predators? And how will the Predators react today? Who's out there and available for them to make trades this year? We'll get into that next. It's Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode on Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Preds forward Rocco Grimaldi after the game on Saturday talking about, hey man, long as you're in after 82 games, it doesn't matter if you're in a playoff spot right now, which I guess, Joe, technically, he's right. That is for sure.
Oh, he's right. Get in at the end and you're fine. By the way, with Rocco, he's got to be the first guy picked in a shootout from now on, right?
Oh, that was filthy.
That was nasty.
Backhand move.
Yeah.
He said that's the first time in his life he's gone backhand in a shootout that he can remember.
When's the last time he was in a shootout?
Oh, I don't know. I don't remember him being in one with the Predators. Now, that doesn't mean he hasn't been in one. One does not immediately come to top of mind when I think of it. But it was good.
They don't have a lot of, to me, like, great choices. Like, again, like, hey, Johansson, great player, long time. Like, I would never use him in a shootout. It's just me. And I know his number's okay. I don't care. I don't, like, Forsberg, yes. Forsberg picks a spot and fires.
Yep.
And there's a lot of guys who just mess around too much and make it easy for the go. But that move by Rocco, that was he's got to go top line. I was wondering, like, that with coaches. Save? Oh my God!
We know you're
I can't skate.
You're the epitome of flexibility. Could you have made that save on ice?
I cover a lot of the net. That's about all I got going for me, man.
That's good. Me too, though.
I might have like lucked into it with like stopped it with my head. But no, I mean, like, I've always wondered with coaches. I think I asked Laviolette about this at some point, but how much time do you spend thinking about that? You know, thinking about, I mean, you don't get in that situation too often, and it is admittedly dumb. I don't know what you think about it.
You're not a fan of the shootout, huh?
I think 3-on-3 hockey, I would watch that all day. I'd watch 3-on-3 hockey 24/7. See, it's the most, I love it.
I've grown to hate 3-on-3 hockey because it used to be, especially when it first started, it was chances back and forth, and it was wild, wild west hockey.
They try to hold it for a while.
And now,
and
if you don't get the perfect look heading into the zone, you're backing out of the zone and waiting for line changes to take place. Well, I was watching that 3-on-3 hockey on Saturday night between the Preds and Columbus, and I was like, this is awful.
It was just
line change after line change after line change. Yeah. And you still get your chances in it, but I'm not as big of a fan on 3-on-3 as I was.
But what you get is, you know, you make one little mistake and you got a breakaway. But, yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. The Preds, I thought the Preds – focus a little bit too much on pulling out of the zone and trying to tire him out and keep him on the ice. And then, like, Yossi took a couple shots that I thought weren't good shots in the three-on-three when it's like – but then they passed up probably some good opportunities to take shots. So, you're okay, if you're using that as your guide, that wasn't great three-on-three, but I find it entertaining a lot of the time. But the shootout, of course, is stupid. I mean, I understand you have to end the game. But, like, someone's going to score in three-on-three. Like, if you did 10 minutes of three-on-three, how many times would you go 10 minutes of three-on-three and no one would score?
It'd be rare. I mean, you're going to score at some point.
Just do 10 minutes of too many breakaways. Like, I would go, I'd be good for 10 minutes of three-on-three and then just go back to ties.
See, I can't do ties.
Can't do ties?
No.
The shootouts are stupid. But anyway, I wonder how much coaches think about that. And, you know, let's get a few looks here. Because like Rocco, it looks, again, I'm going on one. I mean, the next time out, he might, you know, go
send
out
in
and
in
like
the corner. Yeah.
Yeah. But he's got to be a shootout guy now.
Well, I mean, there's competition. We talked about the power play. I mean, there's competition for the power play right now. Why not be competition for the shootouts as well?
4D power play?
Yeah.
A 4D power play.
They did end up out there with three defensemen on the power play the other night at one time. I looked up, and there was like 15 seconds left on the power play. And Ekholm, Fabro, and Ellis were all out there at the same time. I was like, oh. You know, we've talked
3D
about going
and
away
one of them's
from
not
the 2D.
Yossi.
Yeah. It was awesome. I've never seen anything like that before in my life. I think somebody just got caught out there.
Yeah.
I don't think they purposely did that. But
Hines is pushing those buttons, man.
That's right.
He's pushing those buttons.
That's right. So, Joe, it's trade deadline day, and you take a look around the league, and there have been a lot of moves that have been made already, the latest of which Mike Green last night going from Detroit to the Edmonton Oilers, which Mike Green was an interesting guy because I thought that could be someone the Predators were taking a look at in terms of your veteran defenseman. Now, he's more of an offensive defenseman than he is a defensive defenseman, although his defensive numbers this year, even on an awful Detroit team, they're not terrible.
Of course, Stevie Webb's going to make a deal with Ken Holland, though. You know? If he's going to make a deal, he's going to make a deal with his buddy Ken Holland.
Yeah, and he did that, sending Mike Green to Edmonton. Ilya Kovalchuk yesterday traded from Montreal to Washington. There are still a couple of names out there that are intriguing in terms of potential interest for the Predators, and I agree with you from what you said earlier in the show. I think the most likely scenario today for the Predators is nothing happens. I think, you know, just based off what's out there in the market and where this team is in the standings, 2 points out of a playoff spot right now, I think the most likely option is they don't do anything just because I don't know if a deal they're comfortable with is going to materialize. But there are some defensemen out there that are still available. Eric Gustafson from the Chicago Blackhawks. You've got Ron Hainsey in Ottawa. The Predators, I think Kevin Allen has linked them to Connor Sherry, who's a forward from Buffalo, who, as we know, used to play for the Pittsburgh Penguins, had a great year the year Pittsburgh beat the Predators in the Stanley Cup Final. But there's been this narrative this weekend, Joe, that some Predators fans have floated out there to me that I don't agree with. And that narrative has been this. If you're David Poile, you have to pick one or the other. You have to either be a buyer and go out and buy, or you have to sell. The last thing you can do is do nothing. And I just don't buy into that this year. I think you absolutely can do nothing.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, look, what are you buying and what are you giving up?
I mean,
you've kind of strapped yourself on prospects and picks to give up. So I understand in general that idea. Like, don't be caught in between. In general, I get the idea, but with this team, what do you need to add? To me, you need to add, if you could have another reliable defenseman, that'd be great. What you need is for, like, your guys you pay a lot of money to play more like guys who should have that kind of salary. I mean, it's a weird situation, but I think standing pat is the thing to do. And I don't think that there's a reasonable big buy out there. There are big sells. And you could make the case that you should still do that, that, you know, Granlund's going to walk anyway or whatever. This weekend I texted Vingan yesterday, actually, and I said, we're sure Bonino like is actually sick
he
or whatever,
was sick.
Right?
He was sick.
I mean, it was interesting timing. I just, you know, it's like, because Bonino to me, if I was someone else, if I was a contender on the outside, I'd be very interested in him. I mean, you know, depending on what I'm looking for, but he's the type of guy who's had a really good year, and he's the type of guy you can plug in, and you know he's going to be, you know, terrific in the defensive zone, and he's going to make plays for you. Like, he's a guy I could see someone else wanting. So I'm like, you're sure, right? This isn't like keep Bonino under wraps before
he gets. He would have practiced Thursday if he wasn't. If he was,
that's exactly what Adam said. So I left him alone after that. But yeah, I don't. I think they're going to stand pat, which will be so weird.
Yeah.
You know, because usually David Poile is a flurry of. I'm sure he's still on the phone a lot today. But
yeah, and look, there could be something that David Poile is not anticipating right now.
Sure.
That happens, you know, in a couple hours. I mean, things materialize out of nowhere on trade deadline day, and David Poile might have a plan going in to today of what he thinks he's going to do. And I don't pretend to know what David Poile's plan is. He's obviously been doing this for a long time. But a lot of times, even in the span of 30 minutes, those plans can change pretty dramatically based off what other teams around you in the standings have done, what other teams in your division have done, and what becomes available. I mean, there may be a player by 1:30 today that's available that you didn't otherwise think would be, and maybe that's something that you choose to do. I get the narrative out there that you don't want to lose Granlund and Smith for nothing, because I mean, there's almost, in my opinion, there's almost a 100% chance that there's no way both of them are coming back next year, just from a salary cap standpoint. So I get it. You don't want to lose those guys. You also can't just blow it up right now when you're 2 points out of a playoff spot. I mean, I think if you looked at your players right now and said, all right, we get it, you're 2 points out of a spot, you've got 4 games in hand on the Arizona Coyotes, but a team's offering us a second-round pick for Mikael Granlund, we can't pass that up. I mean, your team would be looking around like, oh, I mean, why are we doing this? We're 2 points out of a playoff spot.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I was just going to ask you, hypothetically, what if someone offered you a first-round pick for Granlund? You're David Poile today.
I mean, you'd have to consider it, but it would also depend, like, what team is it? Because if the Boston Bruins are offering you a first-round pick
for
Granlund,
that's still not a great pick.
It's not a great pick. Like, you're talking probably 31st overall.
I mean, no one's doing that.
Right.
That isn't close to the top of the standings. I mean, right, so... But the Granlund thing is interesting because obviously he's been the most productive player under John Hines, 9 goals now?
Uh-huh.
So
scored
he
again
has,
the other night, by the way.
Yeah, elevated his value. But you could also look at that and say, well, does that make this place more attractive to Granlund? Because, you know, obviously he's producing right now. He's finding his footing here in Nashville. You know, does that mean that, you know, he would consider coming back? And like you said, it may not be reasonable anyway to sign him for the money he wants in the offseason.
Right.
But to me, you still, like, you take him out right now, I mean, he's like the most consistent. He and Turris are the guys who are driving this largely right now. So you take him out, and again, what does the team think? You know? I mean, you could still make the playoffs without him, but yeah, I think now you're adding this, okay, management doesn't believe us, to the whole mix of inconsistency this team already is dealing with.
Yeah, and I think when you look at the trade deadline, you're forced to make decisions sometimes very quickly. But I think David Poile, it's pretty safe to say, in his mind, has thought out just about every conceivable scenario of what's going to happen today and played out how he would react to that. In his mind. Let's go to Adam real quick, who wants to get in on the Preds. Adam, thanks for calling in to ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, man. I don't think y'all are going to like what I'm going to say, but I'm going to say it. Watching Arvey come back, I think he's skittish to get hit, if you guys have noticed that. He's still flying around, but he's losing the puck a lot. It's like he's pressing right now to do well. I think he'd be a good candidate. Like, John Hines has no ties to RV or nothing emotional like the fans do. I know he's not the one pulling the trigger, but he's got to be in, you know, David Poile's ear, like, hey, I'm sure we get a lot for this guy. I think he would be a good piece. I don't think it's going to happen, but I think if you wanted a good person to trade who's not really adding a whole lot to your team and could get something good in return, RV would be a really good pick.
Hey, thanks for the call, Adam.
Adam's trying to get rid of Arvidsson. Jeez, Adam, come on, man.
Look, I'll say this. I don't think what he said is crazy.
I don't either.
In terms of maybe a guy like Arvidsson getting moved, it's not going to happen today.
Nah.
It's not. When you're talking about those big names of Johansson and Duchesne, Arvidsson, none of those guys are getting moved today. If that happens, that's going to be in the offseason, and that probably means that the rest of this season did not go particularly well for the Predators, and David Poile at that point feels like he has to do something this offseason to shake this group up and get some new blood in here. But I'd say, I never say never, but it would shock me today if one of those three guys is on the move.
Well, with Arvidsson in particular, to me, if you think that these injuries that keep piling up are affecting him long term and he's not going to be a 30-goal guy who's still at a pretty good bargain rate,
yeah,
then fine. But if you believe that he's going to come back from this and most of his playing career that we've seen is going to be what he is in the future, you don't even think about moving that guy.
When we come back, I got an interesting question to toss out there. What is more likely for the Titans, and what is the more realistic window? Can Tom Brady help them win a Super Bowl in the next year or two? Or is it more realistic that Ryan Tannehill can do that and maybe extend that window out for the next 3 or 4 years? We'll get into that next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Corey Curtis from News 2 will join us at 7 o'clock to begin the 7 o'clock hour. Mike Reese, NHL, ESPN NFL Nation Patriots reporter, will join us at 8:30 to talk about the Tom Brady situation that continues to not go away here in this market. People have got Tom Brady fever, Joe. It's awesome.
They do, and Corey Curtis is...
He's been leading the charge.
He's releasing the virus into the airways of Nashville.
He is. So
he's one of the big culprits here.
So, Joe, when you're taking a look at this conversation, everybody would agree that if you're getting Tom Brady, it's probably going to be for 2 years at the most, and it very well could be for 1 year, just based off where he is in his career and what decisions he makes in terms of how long he's going to play. Ryan Tannehill would be presumably more of a longer-term solution unless they decide to go the route of the franchise tag. But I think most people would expect, 3, 4, 5-year deal for Ryan Tannehill if he signs with the Tennessee Titans. What gives the Titans a better chance to win the Super Bowl? Is it the short-term route with Tom Brady, with this group that they have right now, or is it locking down Ryan Tannehill longer term to ensure that they at least have a quarterback of the future moving forward?
Yeah, that's a good question. Actually, I see my answer probably points toward Brady because I really believe in the NFL. Of course, you want to lock up as many good players long term as you can. You want to think, you want to have something that lasts. But I think, honestly, in the NFL, you can't have anything more than a 2-year plan.
Yep.
So, from that perspective, I mean, if you look at the Titans right now, you've got guys like Jarrell Casey, getting older. I mean, he's sort of like, the central guy in that defense for a long time now. You've got some other guys who are coming up on, coming up on second contracts. I mean, they have gotten younger at some spots, but I mean, even like a Taylor Lewan, after 2 years, he won't be old, but I mean, there's some guys like that who are pushing 30, and then, you never know where you're going to have to replenish yourself. I just think it's hard in this league, as year to year as it is, to think of anything but next year and then maybe the year after. So if that's the case, then why wouldn't Brady be your choice? I mean, again, I'm going to say the unpopular opinion that I think even in the short term, I would take Tannehill right now. And I mean, like Corey Curtis is going to blast that idea. And I understand Tom Brady's Tom Brady, except I don't think he is Tom Brady anymore. And again, biggest thing that I think gets lost in this whole thing with Brady and Tannehill is what Arthur Smith did using Tannehill's athleticism in this offense was a big part of it. No, you're not using any of that stuff with Tom Brady. Does that matter? Someone would say, well, so
don't disrespect
whatever.
Tom Brady like that. Have you seen his NFL Combine videos?
I do.
That is peak athleticism, and I will not stand for you besmirching him in front of me like that.
I mean, I'm still trying to figure out what they were doing. When they had the throwback pass to him here, they were getting blown out. Like, I'm like, is Belichick trying to get him killed? so he can just...
When you have a high-level athlete like that, Joe, you've got to get him the ball any way you can get it to him.
I mean, he looked like me at the family picnic. He did. Just stumbling around. And I'm like, oh, man.
That wasn't pretty to watch.
I was like, okay, he's done. This team's done. Let's move on. Of course, then they go win the Super Bowl. But
certainly was not the Philly special that they dialed up right there that Nick Foles made famous.
But that is, I mean, the athleticism is part of this, too. And age. Now, the age thing is more a discussion if you're thinking long term. You're thinking 4 years. And again, like, I'm not saying you don't. If you can lock up a good quarterback for multiple years, yes, do it. But I just think when you really think about can this team make a run, if you're the Titans brass, I think you need to focus that on the real short term. Because, I mean, look, how far are they? They were just in the AFC Championship game. Doesn't mean they're going to get back there anytime soon, but they were just there. So what's your best chance of, you know, having a chance to be back there and take the next step? I would say that the two elements that made you one of the best offenses in the league over not 10, but 13 weeks, I would try to have those pieces back.
I tend to agree with you, and I think you and I have said in an ideal world, Tannehill is probably our choice and the way to go just because of where they are in their careers. But I will say this. If you can convince me over the course of the next few weeks here that Tom Brady, the struggles he had last year and that offense had last year were exclusively because of the lack of playmakers that he had, and you can convince me that he still is close enough to the Tom Brady that can go out there and win Super Bowls, and you add the Titans talent that they have on this roster, then I think we're probably having a different discussion at this point, at least from my vantage point. I tend to believe, like you believe, Joe, that Brady's skills are starting to diminish. And that happens. I mean, he's going to be 43 years old when next season begins. It's going to happen at some point where he's just not the same guy. And I worry that last year was the start of that. But if someone can convince me that it wasn't, and he still has the skill set to be the Tom Brady of old that we've seen and win Super Bowls and compete for Super Bowls, then yeah, I'd probably go Brady at that point.
Well, some people will swear by that, and you know, I mean, a lot of.
But I don't know how you could be really confident on that. Like, yeah. Like, how would you really know?
Well, in a lot of his career, he hasn't had elite weapons. Obviously, he had the brief period with Randy Moss, and
sure,
that team probably, that team should have gone undefeated, but. For a lot of his career, he hasn't. He's had like David Patton out there and stuff, and he's made those guys better. So why didn't he make those guys last year better? Does that not speak at all to diminishing skills? I think you can make the case it does. I watching him play again, even I mean in person here last year, and in Foxborough, 6 weeks ago. That wasn't the elite top two or three quarterback in the league that he's been the duration of his career. It's not. So doesn't mean that he couldn't come in here and be great with this offense. And if he's really interested, I mean, you certainly, you don't just say, sorry, Tom, yeah. Good luck, buddy.
Have fun.
I mean, there'll be conversations. Obviously he and Mike Vrabel have great relationship. You know, this is going to be discussed. Everybody's going to be in Indy. I mean, not Brady, but everybody in NFL, maybe he will. Maybe he'll come in a mustache and go get beers with Vrabel. But I think you certainly discuss it. But I like in the final analysis, if I'm just given a choice, door A, door B, I'm going with B, Tannehill.
We know that our good buddy Corey Curtis loves him some Tom Brady and loves this discussion. He said for weeks now, Joe, that he thinks Tom Brady is coming. He thinks that he will be here next season.
He just wants us to have fun in the media. He just wants us to have fun.
I mean, who doesn't? We would all certainly have fun if Tom Brady is the starting quarterback for the Tennessee Titans next year. When we come back, we're going to talk with Corey Curtis from News 2 about this situation and what we make of the continued swirling rumors out there about Tom Brady's interest in the Tennessee Titans. That's next. You're listening to Morning Drive live from the Wholesale Inc. studio powered by RumAlone.com. This is Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad. We'll be back with Corey Curtis on ESPN 102.5 The Game.